Welcome to this conference on confronting homophobia in our schools. Welcome to the University of Melbourne and also to the Melbourne Graduate School of Education. I'm Ray Misson and I'm Acting Dean of the Melbourne Graduate School of Education at the moment. Before proceeding, I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people who are the traditional custodians of the land on which this conference is taking place. I would also like to pay respect to the elders, both past and present, of the Kulin Nation and extend that respect to other Indigenous Australians present. This is a very important conference, and I congratulate and thank the Graduate Students Association at Melbourne for their initiative in organising it, and the other organisations who have contributed to it, and particularly to the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development. It's an important conference because, in spite of all the good work and many gains over the last couple of decades, there's no doubt that homophobia is still a serious problem in our schools. There's the very ugly face of explicit bullying and worse of lesbian and gay students. But then, almost as bad, there's the pervasive homophobia that's conveyed through jokes, casual comments, looks between people when they think that there are no lesbian or gay kids around. And, of course, you never know when there are lesbian or gay people around. We are everywhere. And that kind of pervasive attitude and atmosphere can be extraordinarily damaging for a young person who's unsure of their sexuality. It's often said that you don't come out just once, but you have to come out over and over again, almost every day. Similarly, you don't have one training session and all the homophobia in a school has gone. But the need to confront homophobia has to be reaffirmed over and over again, which is why this conference is so important and why we're so pleased that so many people have come to it. And now I'd like to invite the Honourable Bronwyn Pike to open the conference. Bronwyn Pike, as you know, is the Victorian Minister for Education, Skills and Workforce Participation and has overseen developments in Victorian education that have made it one of the most admired education systems in the world. She does come from a teaching background, which always helps, but it's worth noting in the context of this conference that in her previous portfolio as Health Minister, she set up the Ministerial Advisory Committee on Gay and Lesbian Health, which was a highly influential group, not least because they asserted so strongly that homophobia and discrimination were health issues. And that led to the foundation of Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria. So I have great pleasure in asking the Minister to open the conference.
Well, thank you very much, Ray. Thank you for that warm welcome. And we're a very quiet, subdued group this morning. We should be cheering because we're breaking new ground today. And I'm certainly very excited to be here. Delighted to be sharing this early part of the conference with you and to be opening it formally. Ray, thank you for your acknowledgement of the traditional owners, and I add my voice to that acknowledgement as well. Well, as Ray said, homophobia is a particularly insidious form of oppression. And in the school years, we know that it can do tremendous damage to students, to individuals, and to groups of students. But it can do a lot more. What it really can do is undermine the ability for us as a society to appreciate diversity even more broadly. It can make it unsafe for anybody who is displaying some uniqueness or individuality, something that diverges a little bit from the so-called norm. It inhibits our ability to appreciate anything that's outside of the mainstream. And that, in fact, diminishes all of us. So if we tolerate homophobia, if we tolerate racism, if we tolerate sexism, that tolerance demeans and diminishes the whole. And it's totally unacceptable that homophobia can go unchecked in our whole society, and certainly in the places of learning when people are developing their ideas and where we're influencing their ideas, it's completely intolerable that we allow homophobia to go unchecked. So I certainly, in my role, and I know you in your roles as well, want to send a very clear message to Victorian schools about the critical role that they play in supporting sexual diversity. And as a result of some early initiatives, every government school principal has received this message through the booklet Supporting Sexual Diversity. And this booklet was produced in partnership with La Trobe University, the Department of Health, and the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission. And we're very lucky that Dr. Helen Zoke is with us today, because of course she's going to be speaking with you later. But she also helped us in the development of that material, and also the same-sex attracted employees policy, which provides guidance and information to schools and parents concerning school employees in same-sex relationships. And that's been a further development that was really important. These are really groundbreaking documents, and they are part of the reason, Ray, why we do lead the nation regarding homophobia in our schools and in a lot of other areas. Because I think that Victoria has taken the lead in taking these issues very seriously and put very practical steps in place to make sure that we do confront homophobia. We've also recently released another publication, Building Respectful and Safe Schools. It's a resource that addresses issues around homophobic bullying and is part of our broader agenda in the Victorian government, which is really trying to help young people particularly to be more respectful of themselves and more respectful of others. And finally, just last week, I was delighted with Roz to launch the Safe Schools Coalition Victoria, which is genuinely an Australian first. I said it's probably a word for first. Roz was a bit more modest. She said the Southern Hemisphere. It doesn't matter. It is fantastic. And it has been made possible, of course, by a grant from the government. But that then allowed it to take off, and it has been developed in partnership with the Rainbow Network and the Foundation for Young Australians. And the coalition, as you know, is a group of schools, an ever rapidly growing group of schools and individuals who are absolutely dedicated to tackling and reducing homophobia in schools. And let me say that in the time that I have been Education Minister, this has been one of the biggest times of fan mail that I have experienced. And in fact, I was at a function just the day after. It was the Premier's Reading Challenge, where, you know, we give out certificates to kids in schools who've read lots of books. And, well, it's good. It's a good thing to do when you're in education, read lots of books. But one of the authors, who are our ambassadors, came up to me and he said, "Thank you so much for your support of the Safe Schools Coalition." And, of course, he had read about it on the front page of The Age, which, of course, we were so delighted about. And he said, "You know, my son came out in year 12. The school was pretty good about it, but this is just so affirming and positive for him." And I have received other emails from parents. I think someone said to me, it just absolutely made my day. It was one of the best things I'd ever seen on the front page of the paper to read about the coalition. So it is about doing the right thing in terms of public policy, but it's also about the way in which you genuinely touch people's lives, because everyone in our community has someone who's close to them who is same-sex attracted, and nobody wants someone who they love to be hurt. And so we want to make sure that our schools are safe and that people can grow up without fear, so that they can enter adulthood and in a way that enables them to realise their potential and, of course, then unlocks that potential for the rest of us and makes our society a much stronger place. So I think the coalition is fantastic, and as Roz said earlier, it's really about creating a framework. A lot of people want to do good things, but they're not quite sure how to tackle it. And when you kind of pull it together with this sort of initiative, it gives shape and form to people's actions. And I think that's really terrific. And, of course, teacher training is another absolutely critical area that we need to inform when it comes to tackling homophobia in our schools. And many of you here today are about to enter into the world of teaching, which I think is one of the most rewarding and meaningful professions in our community. And you will have a direct impact, and it's, you know, an onerous responsibility, but you will have a direct impact on influencing the attitudes and values for the future generation. So it's not just about the nurturing of the children in your care, it's about reflecting the kinds of attitudes and values that we want our culture to have. And those, as Ray said, can permeate a classroom environment in a thoughtless and negative way, or they can be checked and they can be transformed into inclusive and positive and respectful messages about tolerance and the respect for diversity. And if you lead by example, your schools will be safer places. And that is a priceless and precious gift that you can offer to your students and offer to your school community and offer to our community as a whole. So before I go, I want to thank and congratulate everyone who's been involved in today's conference. Obviously, the University of Melbourne Graduate Student Association has offered great leadership, and I particularly want to thank Josh Schmidt, Joanne Ruth and Paul Coates for inviting me here today. I want to thank my department and people from my department who are here, who've been great partners and worked actively on this agenda. And, of course, I again want to thank Roz for her leadership, particularly in the developing of the coalition. So everyone here today is absolutely committed to making sure that every child in Victoria gets every opportunity to thrive and learn and grow and shine. They won't get that opportunity if they have to confront homophobia in their daily lives, but this is a fantastic step in our journey to deal with these issues, and I do hope you enjoy the conference and find it very rewarding. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister, and thank you for your commitment and enthusiasm for supporting and celebrating diverse students in our schools. I'd now like to welcome Dr. Helen Zocchi, the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commissioner. Helen has worked in the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission since 2004, first as Chief Executive Officer and Chief Conciliator, and then in her current role as Commissioner since 2009. She's currently a Director of the Adult Migrant Education Services and a Board Member of Multicultural Arts Victoria, and has held a lot of other positions on very important statutory bodies around equity. She will be talking to us about the human rights framework for supporting sexual and gender diversity in schools. So welcome, Dr. Zoki.
Thank you. And as the Minister leaves, can I just reinforce that what you've demonstrated, Minister, is leadership, and your message to schools and to these people in this room in terms of their role in the school and the future, you've really walked the talk. So I really congratulate you. So thank you. Thanks very much. Can I also begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land and to pay respects to elders past and present. I have to tell you that standing here and looking out is very distracting because it's the most stunning Melbourne landscape out there. So I'm glad that I'm looking at it and not you, so you're not distracted. I do think this is this really is an important event, and the graduate school must be thinking the timing of it is absolutely exquisite. And my own academic background is actually in public policy. And so, you know, you kind of understand how windows of opportunity open in terms of policy initiatives. And I think what we've seen in the last little while, after many years of hard work by many people in this room, that the public policy environment is just opening up in terms of the recognition of damage in relation to homophobia. And what I want to talk about is, I guess, just reinforcing some of those messages and building on the important work that's been done by young people in this room, by organisations like Gay and Lesbian Health, and I can't emphasise how important it is to have a research and an evidence base when we're dealing with these issues where, whether we like it or not, there are very different views in the community. There are people who have concerns, both about homophobia, but also about gay people. And I think what we need to do is to work from an evidence base in that regard. And if we reflect on schools, most Victorian children will spend up to 13 out of their first 18 years at schools. So whatever else you would say, schools are an incredibly important environment. What happens in those schools isn't important just because of the 13 years, but it's crucial in the process of developing the individual that we will become. And I think the other thing that we all know, because we've all been through a school system of one sort or another, is that schools are not just centres of academic learning. They're environments in which children and young adults acquire values and have them reinforced. They learn about themselves, about other individuals, and about how groups behave and how they fit in within their own societies. And what kids learn about in schools is they learn about power and they learn about influence and they face challenges and they enjoy triumphs. But most importantly, they lay down the patterns of behaviour and they internalise attitudes that will very likely stay with them for a long time, long after they leave school and join the adult realm. So what do gay children and young adults learn at school? And this is where the research is really important because it actually paints quite a scary picture. And many people in this room are familiar with these statistics, but I think we have to keep talking, we have to keep reinforcing what the research tells us. Gay children learn that they are not universally accepted by peers, and indeed some gay children learn to be scared because of their homosexuality. Up to 60% of same-sex attracted young people experience verbal and physical abuse, and nearly three quarters of the abuse they suffered is experienced within the school context. Now that's horrifying in itself, but when we reflect on what happens before this abuse and what happens next, the situation becomes even more bleak. Same-sex attracted young people who've been abused because of their sexuality fare worse on almost every indicator of health and well-being than those who had not, and they are most likely to turn to self-harm, to report an STI, and to use a range of legal and illegal drugs. And what about what came before the abuse? What of those who would dismiss, bully, or even assault a fellow student because of their sexuality? Well, of that group, I would make one observation. Unlike homosexuality, intolerance and even bigotry is not innate. It's a truly learned behaviour, and we know this because babies and very small children do not distinguish between people on the basis of their sexuality, let alone more physically obvious characteristics such as race. And I think that's a really important thing to learn. And if you believe that, then you'll agree with me that intolerance is a habit. And as anyone who's ever tried to give up a bad habit, such as smoking, knows, bad habits are hard to break, especially when they're not replaced by another bad habit. So what can be done about any lack of acceptance of gender and sexual diversity in schools? One approach, of course, involves identifying incidents and addressing them as they arise. And until the introduction of the Victorian Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities, that was only an approach that bodies such as my own commission could take. But there was a problem with this approach, and the problem is really twofold. Firstly, it relies on letting a situation happen and then rectifying it. It relies on actually an act of bullying or isolation or stigmatisation to occur and then to try to do something about it. And even if a satisfactory resolution is reached, it's impossible to calculate the personal and the emotional toll that may have taken on an individual who suffered abuse. And then to illustrate the second reason why such an approach falls short, let me turn again to some of the research and to the statistics. In 2007 and 2008, our commission received 60 complaints which related to discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. That equates to 60 instances in the whole of Victoria in which someone felt they were treated less favourably on the basis of their sexual orientation. And from what many people know, in living their day-to-day lives, one way or the other, does this really seem like an accurate reflection of the extent of discrimination against gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, intersex or queer people? And I don't think it does. The research clearly reveals that the complaints that we receive as a body that's supposed to be protecting human rights in a general sense represent only the very edge or the very tip of the iceberg of all sorts of discrimination that gay people, let alone students, experience on a daily basis. But why don't they complain? Because bringing a complaint of discrimination of any sort, including sexual orientation, takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of courage and energy, and it also takes a lot of resilience. And people who are GLBTI are often busy dealing with all sorts of inequalities on a daily basis, without taking up every instance of discrimination. And that's why we, as a commission, with a responsibility to administer laws in Victoria, believe that any efforts to reduce inequality, let alone abuse, must be proactive and systemic rather than reactive and incident-driven. Because ultimately, prevention is better than cure. By requiring public authorities, and schools are public authorities, to consider human rights in the course of decision making and to act in line with human rights, the Charter of Human Rights that we have in Victoria seeks to embed consideration of human rights issues within the public policy process at the point of planning and development, not after an incident has occurred. And only by taking a systemic, framework-driven approach to gender and sexual diversity in schools can we hope to improve the acceptance of GLBTI community students. And the fact is, and I think the Minister has reinforced this point, if we can improve things in schools, we can and will change the face of society. So what does a human rights-based approach involve? Well, it involves taking human rights, which obviously encompass many things, including issues of sexual and gender diversity, into account as a matter of course, rather than after the fact. It involves considering human rights at every stage of a process within a public authority, from the planning to the evaluation phase. And the parameters that must be considered are quite clearly laid out for us in the Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities, which is the act that governs what happens in the context of Victorian public authorities. I want to join in the celebration of the work of others, Ros and others, that was reported in the Age story last week. And that was a coalition of 11 schools who are joining together to not just respect, but actively endorse and smooth the path of sexual diversity in schools. The potential exists within this initiative to take even lukewarm positive attitudes towards gender and sexual diversity and that turn them into lifelong habits of tolerance and acceptance within students of that school. Because as I've alluded to before, intolerance is little more than a bad habit, and the only way to end a bad habit is to replace it with a less harmful one. Now, many commentators are saying that promoting certain schools as gay-friendly may tar all students at the school with the gay brush. And when I first heard this argument, I must admit I laughed. I laughed because I was reminded of a bumper sticker that would be very familiar to many of you at the moment, which reads, "If you can't accept gay marriage, blame straight people. They're the ones that keep having the gay children." And I don't know where that came from, Paul, but you might know. But that aside, a more serious argument against this approach runs along the lines that you might change the law, but you can't change people's mind. And I'm afraid there certainly is an element of truth in that. People, and especially school students, are often told how to behave, but it's a quite different proposition to tell them how to think. In answer to that, though, I'd say this, and I'd reinforce it. Intolerance is a learned habit. By teaching and reinforcing tolerance, we can replace a habit with another, more positive, more lasting, and ultimately, a less destructive habit. Those changes can only happen, though, if tolerance and acceptance become the norm. They must become the thread that runs through every fabric of every action, every policy, every segment of curriculum, and also, of course, every playground interaction. Now, the outcome of this approach is more than just a group of kids who stop hitting, name-calling or hurting gay kids. It's a group of GLBTIQ kids who can come out at school with the expectation of being treated humanely and with dignity. And it's a group of straight kids who can come out of school with an expectation of treating others humanely and with dignity. That outcome can't and won't come from a reactive, responsive approach to just individual incidents of harassment and bullying. It can only come from a base change in the way that schools operate. Now, many people in the room here are at the front line of this change. And as graduating teachers and teachers studying in education, you're about to face the complex and the often challenging environment that is the 21st century school. And this will be just one of the many issues that you'll have to consider as you embark on your teaching career. And I completely get that. But I hope that because of what you hear today from all of the presenters and what you find out in your interactions and your discussion with the people that have attended the conference today, that it will actually be one of the issues that you consider seriously and you spend time thinking about, and that you won't ever, ever allow yourself to be a bystander to where bullying or harassment or isolation occurs on the basis of sexual orientation within your school environments. Thanks very much for the opportunity to talk today.
Thanks, Helen, for that really interesting and important address, and a reminder of the fact that prejudice is a habit and can be changed. I'd now like to introduce Stephen O'Connor, who's the Senior Project Officer in the Department, DECD, responsible for sexuality education policy and project development. And Stephen has been working in school health education for the past 11 years. Stephen's done a fantastic job in his role in the department, and there is a constant reminder of this in that he keeps on sending out emails to everybody with all the latest resources on teaching, well, sexuality education in general. So welcome, Stephen, and Stephen will talk about some of the policy frameworks in the department.
Thank you, everyone. It's fantastic to be here, and I just want to acknowledge we've got pre-service teachers, which is fantastic to actually be talking to teachers before you actually get out there. But we also have, I know we have teachers out there doing great things now, and school nurses, and community workers working in the area at the moment as well. We've actually managed to invite to come along today. That's terrific. Here's the little remote. I got rid of the word policy in the title because immediately that tells people it sounds boring. But in actual fact, policy does empower. And if you give policy legs with projects and training, you start doing things, you start creating change. And the really good thing about policy is being able to point to it, to say, well, this is the reason why I'm able to do what I'm doing. And that's really my key message. You are supported. That Victorian Government and Education Department and right down the line through all of the different agencies, government agencies, community agencies, universities, you're supported in creating this change. And I was lucky enough to talk to the minister earlier and I made a point of saying to her, and I really, really feel this, it's unstoppable. We're at the change now that we're making in supporting sexual diversity in schools and being inclusive of sexual diversity, I think is unstoppable now. And it's about keeping that momentum going and doing the hard work that's needed. Now, my background is actually as a HIV/AIDS social worker. I worked initially many years in hospitals, in rehab and then emergency departments. And then drug addiction and alcohol. And then I went to Fairfield Hospital, which reminds me of, it was a gorgeous hospital, if you remember, at the Fairfield Infectious Diseases Hospital down Yarrabend Road. And I started there about 2 years into the beginning of the HIV/AIDS epidemic. And I remember for a couple of weeks there was a road sign with a speed, I don't know what it was, 60 or 70, that someone had actually painted, poofed a hospital over it. And for about a month driving into hospital, it was like this sign saying poof the hospital. It was the same time that we had the amalgamations of the hospitals, and it was the same time that the then Minister for Health was saying hospitals are in the business of curing, not caring. Imagine that now with education. Education schools are in the business of teaching, not caring. That climate at that time, and then working with HIV/AIDS people from the beginning of diagnosis, knowing them for a number of years, and then saying goodbye to them, the community, the gay community that formed around Fairfield Infectious Diseases Hospital, the changes that I saw that were being made at Fairfield Hospital in terms of patient rights, comfort, patients' right to negotiate what their treatment is, and access to trials, and then improvement in housing and welfare, all those things were happening because of the input from the gay community that was very strong and caring. Then we lost Fairfield Hospital and we got broken up and went to the Alfred Hospital and Royal Melbourne Hospital. I went to Royal Melbourne Hospital. I coordinated the HIV service there for about 7 years. And I started to see that change because that continued, that the groups that had formed and were supporting around HIV/AIDS patients just basically moved then to those hospitals. So we started to see the change happening in oncology, all general medicine, all through the hospitals. We started to see the same sorts of improvements, the same sorts of fundraising, creative fundraising ideas that were created, quilts, all the memorials, all those sorts of traditional important rituals that were happening in the HIV/AIDS were starting to improve and make really important changes within the health area as well. And I'm telling you all that because they are the reason why to improve sexual diversity, the importance of supporting sexual diversity and including sexual diversity in schools is so important for the same-sex attracted and gender-questioning students, but it's so important for the whole school's well-being, for all of the students in the school. So I was really keen to just basically share that with you. That's what motivates me. There are four areas, and I've deliberately not actually said what they are as a way of trying to hopefully keep you interested to see, well, what could these areas be that I want to talk about. So look, the first area, they're all obvious when you... inclusive curriculum. Now, what I'm doing is telling you about the different sorts of supports that we have out there, but these are on your DVD, so we've actually got a fabulous sexuality education website called Catching Online, and you can don't go through the department's website to try and get to it. It's just a jungle. Simply go to your Google web search and type in Catching On and Sexuality Education, and you'll find that website. Catching On, Sexuality Education, the reason why I get into sexual diversity is because sexuality education has to lead the way in demonstrating inclusiveness of sexual diversity, or all is lost, if that's not even doing it. But it's leading the way. It's its home. It needs a home, but it then needs to bounce across all curriculum. It's a big website, sexuality education. I just brought that little map along just to show you where the yellow is integrated. That's where all the stuff around sexual diversity appears throughout. So it's not like there's one home that's around sexual diversity. It's throughout, and there are some real centres as well. So that was the only reason why I wanted to show that little visual thing. We have Catching On Everywhere, which is our program development resource. We love the word Catching On. It's a nice buzz phrase. So that's our program development resource around sexuality education, which again is very inclusive of sexual diversity. And then we have our Catching On curriculum materials, which we're constantly updating. And we're working on having across all year levels, prep through to year 10. And look, when we actually say inclusive, we don't mean your name check. It's real learning that's in there about sexual diversity, that it's more than just, oh, yes, you know, I'll do a control F, find, there it is, they've mentioned gay, so it's inclusive. It's not that. It's about ensuring that students are actually learning around family diversity and sexual diversity in their normal curriculum, their regular curriculum across all of sexuality education. And that ought to be the case for... For all curriculum. So while I've actually talked about sexuality education, it then bounces across all curriculum. And we have, and I've this as well as Roz's, all our PowerPoint presentations will be up on the GSA website for the conference and on the Safe Schools Coalition. So I've chucked in a few things like a web link at the bottom there, merely as a way of you being able to use it later. So to take you to where the curriculum planning guidelines shows you where you can actually integrate sexual diversity education throughout other areas of curriculum. The other thing is, this is a very detailed slide, but it's just to show you, hopefully you all know about the whole school approach, and it's basically whole school approach. Yes, it's about being consistent in your teaching and your learning and in the way a school runs itself and develops its policy and protocols and procedures and in the way the school relates to the community, that third circle, and parents. While it's about being consistent, it's also about how do kids learn in those three areas. So when we're talking about learning around, making sure that there's lots of good learning around being inclusive for sexual diversity, we don't just mean in the classroom. We mean all the learning that there is in, and often more powerful, in the way a school runs itself, in the demonstration that the school actually has. And you can do all sorts of creative things, like look at the school's safe school policy and analyse that in class, but you can actually get kids to even audit that, and you'd be more creative than me as teachers. So that was my main point there. Oh, sexual diversity in school. So they're on your DVD. I've got what Professor Ramison just mentioned, on the front page of the Catching Online sexuality education website, there's something called Sexuality Educators Network. If you find that link, and I will get it if you send me a quick email, and I'll add you to this informal email I have that I send out when there's exciting news to say. On your DVD is the health education section of the Victorian Government Schools Reference Guide, and a SHINE article. SHINE, if you don't know, is a periodical that the department puts out on, it's a glossy on different sorts of articles, and the very first one did a double page spread all around, I think it was three pages, around sexuality education with a really good rationale for why it's important to make sure that we have sexual diversity there as well. And then there's that whole school learning model that I just showed you, and the key concepts. So they're all in your DVD. Next area, Here we go. This is really important as well, because the important thing about showing you these different areas is they may be different people who are driving them. So obviously the teachers are driving the learning. In the student health and well-being, we're starting to talk about, could be teachers, but it could be student welfare coordinators and school nurses and social workers and even, you know, connecting up with the community. So a really important policy that empowers work in supporting sexual diversity is the brand new Building Respectful and Safe Schools. And in the table of contents, we have a very specific spot for responding to homophobic bullying. Homophobic bullying has to be named. It's, in fact, have I got time? I probably don't. There's a very good quote. Let's see if I will read it. It is important to acknowledge that the behaviour is homophobic and respond to it accordingly. A teacher or other staff member can state they find comments or actions offensive, ask the student if they know why the teacher has found their statement offensive. I won't go on, but it's for policy that actually gets down to those kind of pragmatic suggestions and ideas. That's really important to then kick off in to other areas, but it's not some kind of wishy-washy large statements. The other important area around support is we have a specific policy section on gender identity, which is looking at transgender students and intersex students, which again is on your DVD. So there are two really important support options there. That gender identity, it's one of the most important things to be thinking about there is if somebody wants to be, they have a preferred gender, it's also about a process of working through that that involves privacy as much as support. That's a critical thing that's actually looked at in that policy. But I'll let you go through those in your own time. The third area, parents and carers. We're talking about two sorts of, it's not just parents of, that's very important, parents of gay kids, but we're also talking about same-sex attracted and transgendered parents. And it's really important to be aware of making sure when you're actually working in schools, that area is not being neglected as well. And I guess here we're starting to look at school principals and school nurses are being a really important part of that community connection. Our website, Catching Online, has a very specific page on for parents, which is a very brave thing to do, but has worked well. And there's this very specific section there around sexual diversity. So it's around inclusion of family diversity in your learning and teaching. It's about talking about recognising that there is family diversity when you actually are connecting with parents. And also looking at appropriate support and education available for parents, for example, if their children are coming out. And the third, oops, so that's all included in the DVD as well, but and, da-da, this is probably the most exciting piece of policy I've been involved in, supporting sexual diversity in schools. This piece of policy covers all three of those areas, the learning and teaching, the support and intervention with our students, and working with parents. It supports you to do all that work. And that is how I see the Safe Coalition of Victoria is able to then basically assist schools' capacity to respond to the important words that are in this policy. And then the Safe Schools Coalition of Victoria can't be everywhere, so it'll be about developing the local contacts that can keep that sustainable so they can work in partnerships. And I will read you my favourite quote from this policy. Inaction may also amount to an implicit authorisation or encouragement of discrimination or sexual harassment. This means that a school staff member who turns a blind eye to discrimination, homophobic abuse, or sexual harassment by students or staff may be held liable on the basis of authorising or assisting discrimination. And the fourth area, same-sex attracted staff. And as Minister Pike let you know, we now also have a human resources, same-sex attracted employees resource, which again is on your DVD. So that's my final statement. Supporting diversity in schools, you are supported. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. I mean, it's impressive when you see in 10 minutes all the development that has happened in supporting more sexuality education in general, but same-sex attracted young people in schools over the last, 5 years, because most of that has come out in the last 5 years. And finally in this session, I'd like to welcome Ros Ward, who by now needs no introduction because everyone has been saying about how wonderful she is and how wonderful the Safe Schools Coalition is. But I will say that Ros, as well as coordinating the Safe Schools Coalition, is coordinator of the Rainbow Network and a researcher at La Trobe University. And since arriving in Australia from the UK, she's worked with same-sex attracted and transgender young people directly in social and support groups and as coordinator of the Rainbow Network. So, welcome, Ros.
Thanks. It's been a big week. I've worn a tie twice. I have one tie. Here it is again. So it's my job this morning to just tell you quickly about what exactly this Safe Schools Coalition is and kind of how it came about. And just to do that, I wanted to introduce Rainbow Network. So Rainbow Network started back in 1998. It was around that time when the first few social and support groups specifically for same-sex attracted and gender questioning or transgender young people were formed. There was four or five workers. They decided to get together, share their experience, share best practice, you know, not write five different session plans for group activities. So it's a pretty sensible idea to get a network together. Since then, the network has really grown and we've included a lot more people than just those who run groups. Although in Victoria now there are 20 social and support groups for same-sex attracted young people right across Victoria that really do some amazing work to offer frontline support to young people, often the only place where young people can talk about their sexuality. And actually I've noticed that a couple of people in this room run those groups. Ash is one of them over there. So yeah, they're all part of the Rainbow Network, but we also have 150 workers, which includes people who work in schools who want to do more to support sexual diversity, want to do better in supporting young people who are same-sex attracted or gender questioning. We offer training and this year in partnership with Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria, we've done professional development sessions with over 250 workers. So it's pretty busy and it's getting busier. And one of the things that's come out of Rainbow Network over and over again is this need and this awareness that something more needs to happen in schools. And so the project, the Safe Schools Coalition project, kind of came through the ideas of people in Rainbow Network and through the work particularly of Jen Sainsbury, who's sitting in the corner, who hasn't had a mention yet, but who works at Foundation for Young Australians. And she'll be telling you more about the kind of international context of where this idea for a Safe Schools Coalition came from. But it's certainly from a real need here in Victoria and from a lot of people who've tried to work with schools and found it difficult, from people who work in schools and have found it difficult. And so it's this idea of putting some of that policy that Stephen outlined into practice and to really give schools the support they need to really make it impossible for a school to make an excuse why they're not doing this work, because there is support available, there's resources, there's training, there's everything a school could possibly need to do this work. The policy's in place. So really it's about getting schools to sign up to the coalition, to commit to doing this, and to get more and more teachers committed to this kind of work. So 11 schools joined prior to the launch last week. Give a little shout out if you're involved in any of these. Prince's Hill, anyone? No. Methodist Ladies College, which is great. Hallam Senior College. Piercedale Primary is our first primary, but I'm sure there'll be more. And there's some real exemplary primary schools. Spenceley Street Primary, I don't know if anyone has done any work there, but they've really led the way in including the kind of rainbow families element of things. Melbourne High School. McRobertson Girls High School, yes, there's one there. Eltham High School, Croydon Secondary College, Bellarine Secondary College, Northcote High, and Eltham College of Education. And just since the launch on Thursday, we've had Lara Secondary College down near on the way to Geelong join, and Juan Turner College, which is in the eastern region. So that's fantastic. So we're still wanting more schools to get involved. You know, there's over 500 high schools in Victoria that could join the coalition. It'd be fantastic if they all did, and primary schools as well. And we're also welcoming associate kind of members, so individuals from schools perhaps where the school is not joining, or teachers, or people who work in the education field, or others who want to be supporting the coalition can either join as an associate member or a friend of the coalition. So we really want everyone kind of who wants to be involved to be involved. For schools, we're offering training that kind of go through those four fields that Stephen outlined. So around inclusive sexuality education, inclusive curriculum, challenging homophobia in the classroom, supporting same-sex attracted and gender-questioning students, and a specific session that's around giving information to parents, which is interesting. We've been offering parents information sessions in schools for some years now. This has never been taken up by a school. So I'm interested to see whether any schools will put this out there as an option. And I'm hoping that this might be part of the discussion in the workshops this afternoon, because I find it a particularly interesting area. We recognise that many schools are already doing good work, so we don't want to repeat anything that a school has already done. And so we're really happy to tailor the program that a school wants. So we will go from where a school already is to work out what the best next step is, whether that's training, whether that's getting resources into the library, all sorts of different things that we can offer, and we will take, you know, each school forward. I hate the moving forward thing, but it just comes out of your mouth. I don't know. And also, there's a kind of consultancy element in dealing with particular issues. Over the years, Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria and Rainbow Network have been places that people have been referred to. Oh, you know, this thing happened in our school, this particular incident or whatever. We can still provide assistance in dealing with those things, even if a school is not part of the coalition. So we're happy to help. There is a website up and running, and there will be more and more new and up-to-date resources in this area. There's a whole range of resources that already exist, but we recognise that some of them were written 10 years ago and some of them have kind of older examples, and things move pretty quickly in schools. So we want to keep up with that, providing resources for teachers and also really importantly for students themselves, because we've already spoken to and kind of consulted with 20 students in high schools who are really active in driving this kind of change, and gay and lesbian students who really, for me, are the most inspiring people in this work, who are actually, you know, saying to their school, we need to do more to challenge homophobia. They're setting up groups for gay students and their allies to work together to actually push the school forward. And these students are really incredible, and we're going to hear from a couple of them in the next session, but we want to give resources to these students, and one of the ideas that we've had is to have a kind of student activist conference early next year. So if you come across students in your work as well, they're a part of the coalition too, and they're a really important part for us. And of course, parents as well. Again, I don't know why I keep getting stuck on parents. I must be thinking about my parents. Other activities that the coalition is involved in are schools marching in Pride. We really want more schools marching in Pride. This is fantastic. Prince's Hill was the first school to ever march in Pride, but we also have had Melbourne High School with the school banner. That makes a big difference. And when I've marched in Pride for the past 3 years with schools, we get one of the biggest cheers for schools, because there's so many young people lining the routes of the Pride March, in the Pride March, who think, oh my God, there's a school that's marching in Pride. If only my school would march in Pride. If only when I'd been at school, my school would have marched in Pride. It just makes a fantastic visible difference to young people. And I reckon for teachers as well, to get out there marching, and principals. So we're hoping to get Safe Schools Coalition a massive contingent in Pride March next year in February. So come and be part of that. We want to be part of the International Day Against Homophobia, the Idaho Day. I always think of line dancing whenever I say Idaho Day. Maybe that could happen next year, I don't know. Midsummer Festival is pretty big in the gay and lesbian community, as many of you will know. We want to be involved in that. There's a young people's area in Midsummer, and we want to get schools kind of involved in these community activities as well. And we have a speakers bureau for schools to access guest speakers. And actually, I had a phone call, and I'm a really big fan of Neighbours. Okay, I'm coming out in public. And a guy called Scott Brennan, who's a comedian, he's on TV, I didn't really know who he was, rang me and said, I was really inspired reading this news about the Safe Schools Coalition. I'd love to offer my services to come and speak to young people in schools, to come and speak to gay students in schools. If I can be of any assistance, let me know. And I was like, whoa, fantastic, great. And then I went and looked him up because I didn't know who he was. And he has been in Neighbours. So I had somebody ringing me who's been in Neighbours. I had to tell my mum in England. This is the pinnacle of my career. No, but seriously, we want more and more people around the community to like get on this. And I reckon if Scott Brennan wants to come and speak to some same-sex attracted students and, you know, be a role model, then I welcome him and I welcome any other famous people you know to give me a ring. So I will be talking a bit more seriously about what Safe Schools Coalition is doing later, but that's kind of an introduction, and I'll leave it there.
Thanks very much, Roz. And yes, Roz will be back later in the morning in the next session to talk a bit more about the work she's been doing. Well, that brings us to the end of the first session, and there is morning tea now. I don't know if anyone who's organising wants to say anything. Housekeeping? No? So thank you all. And could you please thank our four speakers, the Minister in absentia, Helen, Stephen and Roz again.